Happy Life Day, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Pod Stallions. As usual, I am your host, Brian, with my co-host, Jason, who's over there somewhere.
Hello, everybody.
There he is.
Here I am.
And today's episode, with the release of... What episode of Star Wars are we at?
This would be episode 8.
8.
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi
that comes
okay.
out.
Okay. I say Jedi to annoy my children.
Jedi's okay.
We thought we would talk about the greatest and most forgotten chapter. And I know podcasts have covered this before, but damn it, it's worth covering again, is the Star Wars Holiday Special. The
Woo-hoo!
The one and done airing of the Star Wars Holiday Special. This is special to me because I didn't see Star Wars in the theater till 1979. I was already into Star Wars just from osmosis on the playground and seeing pictures and comic books. So the Star Wars Holiday Special is actually the first thing I ever got introduced to that was Star Wars.
I forgot about it.
That's right.
Well, yeah. I think what we're going to do with this, and we're not going to change the world with it, but I got to tell you, I am so exhausted from reading everything trashing the Holiday Special. It is all that they say.
It's weird.
It is all that they say.
Yeah.
Okay. It is all that they say. However. And we all know what the best bits are and what that one bit in particular, which we'll get to and all that stuff. However, I love it not to watch every year, not to watch every 3 years, but I love that it exists because for several reasons. One, I feel very, very lucky that I was a kid that had seen this movie that was my life for a year when this thing hit. And I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen at that point. You know, I was 8 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I feel lucky that happened. I think it's also a gorgeous time capsule because everything kind of started to change with The Empire Strikes Back, not just in the Star Wars world, but in even though there had been sequels to things before in series of films and Planet of the Apes and everything, the mindset became very different. Everybody was looking for a trilogy. Everybody looking for a series of films. And, you know, the way it was grounded in, you know, a grittiness, but also for kids and the family. Everybody wanted that to happen after, you know, Empire. I mean, even with Star Wars. And along comes this thing that is such a mind-blowing batch of weirdness. But it is also in that pocket of stuff that you and I talk about and love. The 70s variety special.
Yeah.
Which we just accepted because the world was movies in the theater, you know, yeah. Toys, comics, books, whatever. Maybe you got a novelization of something or the book on record. And then it was TV. And that's all the world was for that stuff. And
like canned laughter and bad sketches, Sonny and Cher, Donnie and Marie, the Brady Bunch. Yeah.
I mean, And I stand by it.
And I think if you take it out of that, it looks super weird. But at the time, this was 5 days a week you saw this crap. But it was our crap, I guess.
Yeah, it's crap. I mean, there's very little redeeming about the Holiday Special. But for me, it's like, you know, and I know that most conversations I can manage to bring back to the Beatles, but...
Never.
You know, for a long time, the world sort of trashed the Magical Mystery Tour TV special that was done in 67. Oh, my God, it's a disaster. It's like it doesn't go anywhere. And then a shift kind of started to happen.
The commercial for that used to scare me as a kid, by the way.
It's a trip. It's a trippy thing. But I stand by it as, well, where else can you see the Beatles performing I'm the Walrus? You know, where, there are literally music videos within this thing. The only footage we have of them performing these songs, and oh my God, look, the Bonzo Doodog Band is in there in the special with the Beatles, which was a Monty Python connection, and like the baton sort of getting handed, and like this weird, you know, amalgam of things that were coming together. Like I defended on those points on those merits. Well, I look at the holiday special and go, love it or hate it, that is the only other time you see those characters together. Now we've lost Carrie Fisher, and they're all getting older and everything else, but we've got the three movies, and we've got about 2 minutes of footage in this thing of the other actors playing those characters. You know, and there's nothing else. Maybe you have Hamill showed up on the Muppet Show or whatever, but you know, it could only have happened in 1978. It could only have been a TV special. You couldn't have gotten anybody to come back to do these things, you know, years later or whatever. And then, of course, you know, the animated sequence in the middle of it that everybody always points to that blew my head off when it aired, because it is such a thing apart from the rest of the show, but also that synergy. I knew who Boba Fett was by the time that thing aired, because the figure that you mailed away for, think about that. That's like a year and a half before Empire even comes out. They had Fett ready to go.
Yeah.
That action figure on the back of it was like, you know, the back of the card sent mail away was like, he's a threat to the Empire, to the Rebels, especially Han Solo. I knew who he was when I saw that.
You barely knew who he was, but you wanted
barely,
him. And that's the best barely. Thing about him.
And he's cooler in that animated sequence than he is in his other two appearances in the movies. He's got more to do, and he's a badass. And I love it. But let's go back. Was it CBS that did this? Wasn't it CBS?
I think it was CBS, and I'm pretty sure it had that trippy special thing. You know, or like before Charlie Brown or anything like that, you'd see that.
Yeah, it's like
rotating. Yeah. Everybody of a certain age gets the chills. Like, you're gonna get to see Charlie Brown or something even better.
I associate it with Charlie Brown specials and commercials for Dolly Madison zingers and donuts.
You know, I want to just point out something. I want to go right there. Mm. We never got Dolly Madison in Canada when I was a kid, anyways. And about a month ago or 2 months ago, I was in a cheap grocery store, and there was Dolly Madison something, and it was like, I got to have these. They were terrible. they were just the worst thing I'd ever eaten. It was like so much sugar that my insulin levels spiked. And all right.
To be fair, we had different taste buds as kids. Number one, number two, okay. The zingers.
Yeah, and I don't eat sugar, so maybe that was the other thing.
zingers were a religious experience, and they did one. They had one zinger that is raspberry with coconut on it, and then cream filling. And if I was lucky enough to get one of those to be in my lunchbox at school, like every kid wanted to trade for that zinger. It was like eating a freaking birthday cake. You know, in one little thing, but Hostess.
I'm a Vashon kid, man.
Hostess now does zingers. They got the zinger design or whatever it is from Dolly Madison, and now the zingers have a whole new life through Hostess. So they're not the same. They're not nearly as good, but it's nice to know there's a bit of that comfort there that reminds me of those things. So it was a CBS thing,
Joe
and
Louis.
I had to know. You know, I think back, because it only aired one time. It only aired once.
Well, George, I think it aired one time because George Lucas was probably watching it. And this is the thing I just love about this, is George Lucas refuses to make money off of it.
Absolutely not, yeah.
And you can buy a riff tracks of this thing. I mean, it is, I think, the second thing I bought when I started dating my wife, because we started just talking about, and it's become like, you know, that great song by Creedence Clearwater Revival called Bootleg. See how good the water tastes when you can't have none at all. By making it forbidden fruit.
Yeah.
I think he's actually made it more interesting, you know,
well, because it's like if you're into a band, it's like the legendary forgotten bit of music that didn't, you know, get recorded, get released, whatever. Yeah. It really is. And everything else has been reissued, you know, ad infinitum, and we don't anything.
Let's go to Kiss. Kiss has released that. There's two or three different releases of Kiss, Phantom of the Park. And that is an embarrassing
film. The Phantom of the Park, Anthony Zerbe? Was he
there? Anthony Zerbe, who was Matthias in the Omega Man.
That's right.
The Kiss should be embarrassed of that film. It's terrible.
Yeah, but it's awful.
They've accepted it. They've allowed it on, I think, two... Like, I know there are fans who want it on Blu-ray and that sort of thing. It isn't quite the thing that this is. Do you know what I mean? Like, because they've allowed it to be released a couple of times.
Yes, exactly. And
Gene Simmons, I'm sure, if he thought there was value in it, it would be out there because he's Gene Simmons.
Well, I think it's also it also plays to the geek hive mind that we all have when, you know, like if you send me a catalog snippet or something about something that you suddenly go, this exists now or whatever, or a clip from something on YouTube, whatever, and I go, I don't know that I've ever seen this thing. What the hell is this thing? I immediately want to look it up and find out more about
that thing. Yeah.
And here's Star Wars.
It's called Otaku.
What's it called?
Japanese call it otaku, meaning you need to know all the information on something.
Well, if that's what it's called, I got it. I got me some otaku because I went off on this when the last ridiculous Blu-ray set came out with that horrible cover art and shit. And I was like, where are the television commercials? Where are the guest appearances on like, you know, Douglas. Shout Factory does more for their movies than Lucasfilm did for these Blu-rays. And there's a lot of stuff missing out there that should be just the clips alone, even if it's not the entire show, that should be out there. And the holiday special is one of those things. But here's the funny thing. And part of what sparked me to think of doing this was the fact that, you know, Last Jedi is coming out. And I know this thing has been talked about forever. But Hot Toys is doing a 12-inch Boba Fett with the paint apps the way they were in the animated sequence in the holiday special.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it is one of the coolest Star Wars things I've seen in a decade. They did a 3¾-inch figure way back that was like when they were doing those Ralph McQuarrie 4-inch action figures. They did this animated Boba Fett, and it's okay, but it still doesn't quite look. You know, this thing looks more like it came out of the cartoon, the paint apps and the weapons and everything. So there's an audience there here and there for this stuff, but I don't think in our lifetime we're ever gonna see this thing. But it also, I was getting to about the stuff that all the specials and stuff and the stuff that we know, that universe and those weird things. You and I talk about this too. It's in the pocket of that special time when Star Wars was everything in the world.
Yeah,
and we did not, and it wasn't completely figured out.
Yeah.
This guy was called Walrus Man. This guy was called Hammerhead. It wasn't Momon Nadon or whatever. Snaggletooth. And it's also in the pocket of stuff that could be done without Lucas having to necessarily have a hand in it. Because once Empire came along.
My favorite things from that period are the Marvel comics of that time, because that really was more Star Wars to me than the film. I hadn't seen the film. And
did you get the UK comics? Have you ever seen any of the UK comics from like the late 70s?
No, but I had the I haven't seen them, but I had of course the Marvel adaptations, and of course there was that beautiful newspaper strip too that was done by
Russ Manning.
Russ Manning, yes.
I love that stuff. I love
it's
that
gorgeous.
The shadow troopers and you know, the feathered hair. I love that stuff because there's something so charming about it. It's beautiful, you know. I'm not saying stuff after 1980 got complicated. I'm just saying it was a different.
It's the same way I feel about, and this is why I wrote Rack Toys. Like 70s toy packaging is all over the place. Like you know, you pick up an AHI Batmobile and you pick up an AHI Batman on a bike. The packages are just batshit. None of it has any of that linear look. Towards the end of the 70s, they started getting into style guides. And everything looks the same.
Yes,
And we never got out of that. And
did you ever... do you know about the... I think I sent you a link that a UK company that in the UK produced those school supplies for Star Wars back in 78?
Yeah, I think I think
so. They did pencil cases, they did rulers, they did, you know, tins that erasers went in and pencils and things like that. And they made a tin Death Star pencil sharpener. And up until, you know, the past decade, was the only bit of merchandise of the Death Star that ever existed, this little tin pencil sharpener from England. And it's the Death Star, but it's got blue and red and green on it and all these weird, with the logo on the little base and everything. And it's the most charming little piece of merchandise. And they just reissued all those school supplies in the UK. You can order them through Amazon UK. And the pencil cases, you know, Leia, Luke in the X-Wing outfit, like Han's got like brown boots. Like there's just something about them that's just not it's quite on model.
Yeah.
There's a charm to it. And I always think of the holiday special.
Is that a charm and a clunk?
Just a, you know, I mean, like the animated bit alone is just like so far out. It's so mental. Yeah. The things that go on in that thing, you're like, where did this...
Well, like
my
two favorite things from the Star Wars comic at the time were the giant green bunny, Jax, I think his name was, who apparently Lucas
Jackson something.
Lucas wanted to kill.
Yeah.
And they had this villain, I think he was called the Hunter, and he was this half-man, half-cyborg character that Darth Vader ends up killing. That was a great comic. That was my favorite comic, issue number 16.
And they would do things in those comics, and they would do things in the Russ Manning thing where they would take a snippet of something that was said in the Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And then they would expand on it, like a phrase or something, and they'd go, well, you know what that, and what's his name? Who did, not Alex Raymond, but, you know, okay, I can't believe him. He did the Flash Gordon movie adaptation. He did the Star Wars, comic or strips as well after Manning. He's brilliant.
Yeah, beautiful artist.
His Alex Raymond is one of his heroes, and his stuff is, oh my God, I just had this conversation with Alex because he's one of his idols.
Yeah, the guy's...
He did a comic, and there's... Yeah, it's killing me. It's freaking killing me. There's a line in Empire... This comic came out in 81 or 82 as like
Al
a flashback
Williamson.
Kind of thing. Al Williamson.
Yeah,
thank you. I knew it was
an
A. Al Williamson.
Yeah, the guy. Didn't he do the Empire adaptation too? And
he did the Empire adaptation. He did some of the Jedi one because there were different art of Jedi one. He did the Flash Gordon one, which is gorgeous, but doesn't quite look like Sam Jones. He modeled that Flash Gordon on his Flash Gordon. everybody else looked like the actors. But there's a bit in Empire when Han comes to General blah blah, American general, and says, "Hey, I got to get out of here." And he says, "Oh, you got to, we hate to lose you." And he says, "Yeah, well, that bounty hunter we ran into on Horde Mantell kind of changed my mind."
Yeah, and then there's an album I had as a kid, Rebel Mission to Horde Mantell.
Yes, yes.
I actually it's on my desk. The tape is
they do
on
it on
desk.
The yes. And Rockford J, our loyal listener, Rockford J, actually very sweetly made me a disc of a CD of all kinds of Power Records stuff, and that was on there. I don't think I'd ever heard it. I think I had it, but I know for sure in the Al Williamson comic that there's a story where you see what the encounter was with that bounty hunter on. Or I love stuff like that, you know, because now it's too. You know, is it canon? Isn't it canon? You know, who cares? You know, just give me a great story. And I love that stuff. And Holiday Special is that to me. So this was 1978. This was, I don't know enough of where how the phone call got made that somebody was like, hey, we want to do this. But it's amazing to think that this movie that was the biggest movie of all time at that point, that somebody was able to go, let's do a variety special.
It's almost as if, and I can't remember the story, and I think others have told it better, but from what I understand, it was just like Lucas wanted to keep promoting Star Wars, wanted to keep that ball in the air. And how do you do that? And it was such a big hit that there was some sort of, you know, we'd like to do a special on television, and he thought it was a good idea, but he did not exert any creative control.
I think he was like knee deep in what he was doing for Empire, I think.
Yeah.
And didn't. I don't know how much was legally he couldn't put his fingers in there or what, or how much sort of how much tinkering he could do. But it is insane. And if anybody hasn't seen it, we're not spoiling it for you. Han and Chewie are in the Millennium Falcon, and they're being pursued by some TIE fighters, as usual. And also one other thing, and I think I've talked about Star Wars Rebels before, the animated series, which I think is wonderful. I think it's just, I never got into the Clone Wars series, but I think Rebels is fantastic. They use a lot of early Macquarie designs for characters and ships and things like that, that they clearly love this stuff. And it has bits that I sit back and go, I wanted an animated series so bad as a kid. Those 3 years between movies were dreadful, and I just wanted like something to keep us going. And what are they doing in the meantime? What kind of adventures they have? And that's when I would play with my action figures. That's what I pretended to make a series, that it was a TV series. I did the opening credits, and the figures came out of the camera, and you know, all that stuff. And suddenly, here's this thing. They're on television, and you know, Han and Chewie are off doing their thing. They're all kind of doing their own thing. And Han is trying to get Chewie back to his home planet, which I don't think is called Kashyyyk. It was in one of the early scripts, but I don't think they mentioned that word in the special.
I don't think they do.
But apparently Chewie's got a wife and a kid and a stepfather or father or father-in-law, I don't know what.
We never really established that relationship.
We didn't really get to the crux of that, but that's what they're trying to get to. And isn't this holiday
like Lumpy or something?
Yeah, or the kid? No, the stepdad, the old man, the crazy dirty old man is called Lumpy, and the kid is called Itchy or Scratchy, or is the kid called Lumpy? I forget.
God, I don't care.
He's trying to get him back to his planet for a holiday called Life Day. And I think it's the...
That sounds like something George Costanza would try to take off, by the way.
I think it's the one day, and there's a special ceremony, and everybody gets groomed. It's the one day that all the Wookiees get groomed. They get a little haircut. Yeah,
they all got a pet smart and get cleaned up.
Get their eyebrows trimmed, and that happens on Life Day, so we've got to get him back for that. Now we're out of Star Wars again, because then we're on the planet, and we're in the house with the wife and the kid and the old man, and there is no dialogue. There is no dialogue.
It really does just leave you hanging for a while. It just doesn't it?
But I mean, there's not even subtitles. There's not even them growling at each other with a. They're all doing their thing. Like, I don't know who they got to play these people, but I think Rick Baker might have done some of the makeup.
They're actually well done. I think the thing that we also should talk about, and this didn't bother me as a kid. Because, but the transition from film to video, like an old Doctor Who, where like the clips of Darth Vader are just clearly like they just cut them right out of Star Wars, and any of the fight scenes or that sort of thing are just cut out of Star Wars, and then you transition back to this shitty video,
the shitty sort of sitcom.
Yeah,
video.
Yeah, one day at a time, looking stuff. Yeah, and. Now this, as a kid, I didn't notice any different, but when you watch it as an adult, and I've watched it a few times, Luke has clearly he's got a ton of makeup on. I think this is around the time of his accident.
It was actually after the accident happened. I think once he was done filming, I don't think it happened too long after that. So by the time the movie came out. Yeah. I think his face, you know, he had the work done. But what it was, exactly what you said. I feel like somebody came in and did a makeup job on someone for a movie.
Yeah.
But the video footage, they shot it on video, and it is so unforgiving.
Yeah.
That he looks like, you know, it's like he stepped out of La Cage aux Folles to come in and give a speech. And Carrie Fisher's, so that's his scene. Carrie Fisher's in it. R2's in it. 3PO's in it. They got James Earl Jones to do Vader's voice. So again, we only have snippets now of Vader in things. He's in the Rebels show. They got him for Rebels. I'll take any bit of James Earl Jones I can get as that character. Well, he has new lines in this thing. So everybody kind of came back to do the Harrison Ford, obviously, is big.
Just stepping up for a second. How is James Earl Jones in Rebels? Because he's getting old. Is it still convincing Vader, or is it like, I don't know if you've seen these recent Adam West Batman films that they've done.
I got the Shatner one. Yeah, Shatner was great in that. I thought
I thought it was great too, and I love them. But you know, West is sounding his age.
Absolutely.
I'm very happy he did it, but you know, come on, boy, wonder. Yeah. You know, it's just a little bit.
He's just, everything is taking a lot longer to say.
Yeah, and I love it, and I bless Warner Brothers for doing it. But it's,
yeah, no, let me. You know what the beauty of James, because when you watch Rogue One, because I just watched it again recently.
Yeah, Dean, my son loves it, but.
You can definitely hear what you're talking about in the Vader scene. You can hear bits of it, but the beauty of it is the tweaking that they do to the voice, the effects work that they do to the voice, to the performance of the voice, kind of masks a bit of that, and that's in Rebels, you know. But the fact that suddenly Darth Vader is animated on an animated show is mind-blowing to me. And, you know, other characters, because it takes place before Star Wars, before Episode 4. And so, oh, look, there's Leia, there's Lando, 3PO, R2. They pop up in different episodes. And it's all kind of leading to A New Hope. So it's really cool. To me, it's like the closest we're going to get. I still think they could do they could do an animated series from, you know, between Star Wars and Empire. They could still do it. Those are the characters everybody wants to see. I don't know why they have to keep making new characters, and I could do the Han Solo voice and get whoever else you want to do the rest. So there's my offer. But so this thing, and then we spend the next 90 minutes, I think, of this television special in Chewie's home or on that planet, and we're kind of seeing whatever's going on through this family, and they're flipping around television, and then I think they get to a cooking show, and suddenly Harvey Korman shows up as Child-type chef. You know, Art Carney shows up. He's like a...
Oh, no, he's a four-armed guy, right?
He's a four-armed guy, and then Art Carney shows up, and he's a friend of the family and stuff, and, you know, he looks like an old rebel or something.
When you think of Star Wars, you think of Art Carney and Harvey.
Well, it's like that, but think about it. All that was missing from this thing was, like, Vincent Price and Paul Lynde, like the only ones that didn't show up. They looked through the Rolodex of like who's available, who's got big. But you know, that was Bea Arthur is the woman that manages the Harvey Korman was this big television star because of Carol Burnett. Bea Arthur, I think Maude might have been done by then, but she was a really well known face. And she shows up as the manager of the cantina, and then there are songs, but again, you go back to the cantina, and there's a lot of, you know, they took the characters out of the boxes or whatever, and they're walking around the cantina, and you go, wow, we're actually back in what I think is supposed to be the cantina from Star Wars.
Yeah, because the cantina a lot of that was filmed in L.A., wasn't it? Like, wasn't a lot of the cantina done in post?
Well, I think they did it twice. I think they did what they did in Tunisia, wherever the hell they were, or Elstree or whatever it was. And then he didn't like it wasn't creaturey enough, and so then he had Rick Baker do all these faces and stuff and add that in. But there's that, and then we're back at the house again, and bad guys come in and do bad things. They're stormtroopers, as an imperial guy and whatever. Then I think there's a bit where the old man, this is the part that everybody kind of talks about as the biggest WTF moment in the thing, is he puts on some kind of virtual reality headset or something, and suddenly, who is it? Diane Carroll is front of him, basically trying to turn him on, and saying, "I'm your fantasy, and do whatever you want, and you know, leave the money on the dresser, basically, for this whatever this encounter is going to be." And he's sort of reacting to it. And it's really, really insane. It's an insane. Insane thing, but then the highlight comes up where the kid is looking through the same kind of device or something, and we go into this out of nowhere, this animated adventure.
Yeah,
with Han and Chewie, and Luke is in it, and 3PO's in it, and R2's in it, and Vader's in it,
And that was done by actually a Toronto firm called Nelvana,
who did the, they ended up doing the Droid series, and
they ended up doing the Droids and Ewoks. And really cool story was, early in my career, I ended up, my mentor, my boss at the time, his buddy ran Nelvana at the time.
Ooh.
And we got dragged in there just for a BS session. Like, you know, we were trying to work with him on something. I honestly can't remember the deal. I just remember the guy. And I was in heaven because there was just animation cells, like, all over the walls. And I was trying hard not to geek out. And it was really cool. I mean, and Nelvana stuff.
There's something else that they did, though, too. There's some other famous series or something that they did besides the Droids and Ewoks thing. Do you remember what it was?
Well, yeah, they've done tons of cool stuff. They did the Beetlejuice cartoon. They did Care Bears.
Did they do that special with the Gilda Radner special, the Halloween special? Was that Nelvana?
The witch that the Halloween that was almost wasn't with like Bazooie and all that. They did Rock and Rule.
Rock and Rule. Yeah, that was 80 or something, was it? 81. And why did, on earth I would know that? I have no. I'm not sure I've seen the whole thing. I don't know why I would know what freaking year it came out, but
believe it or not, I actually have the original Nelvana. They were in talks to do Doctor Who after the show got canceled. And
that
there's
an image, right? Wait,
I have it. I own it.
You have it?
Yeah, I got it. And my buddy goes, there's a whole bunch of shit from Nelvana animator just dropped off a whole bunch of cells if you want to dig through. And I knew that because I had met a Nelvana animator in like 90, and he had said, yeah, we're talking about doing Doctor Who.
Holy shit, you have that cell.
I have that cell in my hallway. My buddy had this huge pile of stuff from Nelvana, and one of them was the Doctor and K-9 on the Hill. I own that. I paid $20 for that. It's one of my favorite
I remember seeing that image on, I think it was Ain't It Cool News, that somebody had, and that's the one I'm thinking of, and it was this, he's sort of an amalgam. He's not recognizable in any way.
He kind
of
looks like Egon from Ghostbusters. He's got a big question mark jacket. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God! You got to get it. You got to take a picture of that tonight.
Sure.
I want to.
It got
that.
A little damaged in the flood, but it's still there.
So they were pretty well known. Again, I want to know more about this. I want to know why a show, you know, that was made, you know, probably at CBS up the road from me, you know, in one of their studios, how they got to Nelvana and said, "Will you guys do this animation?"
I want to know. Did because Nelvana had such an interesting look to their cartoons.
It's kind of everything is kind of rubbery. I remember, you know, in the animated thing, like, but the Falcon crashes on a planet and it's like made of liquid. This planet. There's
but I was
like
talking
weird...
more about the caricatures of the characters too.
Yeah, and then but when you get to them, it's like everything is sort of, you know, Luke looks like even more of a surfer boy than he did a California surfer boy.
Yeah.
And every bit of Han is more exaggerated. The nose and his eyes are barely open. And
yeah.
You know,
it's a really goofy kind of caricature of Harrison Ford. Yet it kind of works too.
It works. And in fact, it looks a lot like Adam Driver. When you look at it now, you go, oh my God, that looks like somebody must say, oh, Adam Driver looks like Harrison Ford. This, I hope that wasn't a spoiler for anybody that hasn't seen The Force Awakens.
Do you know that there's a Beatles connection to Nelvana? First of all, the two guys that formed it came from my alma mater, which was York University. And the Passion for Advent? Oh, no, never mind. One of the guys who teamed up to start Nelvana, the three guys who teamed up to start Nelvana, one of them worked on the Yellow Submarine.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
No, I did not know that. See?
Yeah.
I love that stuff. I'd love to know how, in whatever coked up script meetings that they were having to make this thing. And I think Bruce Valanche is one of the writers on this thing, by the way.
He most definitely is. And I want to just go back to Bruce Valanche for 2 seconds.
Please. We could do a whole episode on Bruce
Valanche. Yeah, a whole Bruce. About a month ago, Ice Pirates came on TV and I recorded it. And
of course,
because you know it's going to get better. And
yeah, it will.
I watched the whole thing, and I went on Twitter, and I went, "Ice Pirates is still terrible." Just thought you'd like to know, kind of. And I got told that I was a monster, basically. Like, you know, it's all relative to how old you are, I think, and. But I,
you know, I don't buy that. I mean, I remember being 9 years old, you know, loving Moonraker when I saw it, and being in the parking lot afterwards with my brother Gino and my dad, and saying, and then talking about how goofy it was and the goofy stuff that happened, and knowing that it was goofy and it's not that good. Like, I love Tron. I love the look of Tron. I love the idea. Whenever I would never sit here and go, "It's brilliant. It's so great. Oh, you're so wrong." That is a thing. We talked about this. The guy, the you know, suddenly Hook is a really beloved film. You know, I don't understand that really. I mean, but like you say, to each their own or whatever. But I saw Ice Pirates in the theater. I think with my dad. I saw it in the theater, and we were just so hungry for anything that looked like, you know, space stuff. I didn't realize it was a comedy. And man, when the space herpy thing came up on screen, I was like embarrassed. You know how you're embarrassed around your parents? You're like, ooh, I don't want nudity around my parents,
dude,
or whatever.
Dude, that was weird. All the right moves with my mom.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and it was just like,
I think I saw Johnny Dangerously with my mom.
Oh, I
know it was PG-13, but there's a lot of racy stuff in there. You know, I just thought PG, I'm going to be fine. What could possibly, you know? And I just shrunk in my seat. It was just so embarrassing.
It seemed like in the 80s, no matter what the movie was, if I went with my mom, there was going to be boobs all over the place.
Something was going to happen. There were going to be boobs.
It didn't matter. There was going to be toplessness.
Something. It's true.
But, you know, that's true of almost, like, you're batting 1,000 in the 80s. I remember, like, my aunt, my cousin, also named Brian, he was about 6 or 7 years younger than me, and he loved Mr. T. And for his, like, 6th birthday or something, they put, like, DC Cab on. And I'm just like, oh, there's tons of nudity in that. That's going to be hilarious.
This is a bad idea.
And of course, you know, like, my mom got a call from her sister going, "Oh my god,
I can't believe that happened to me once with a cousin." That my mom was upstairs talking to my aunt or something, and this older cousin put on a Cheech and Chong movie.
Oh yeah.
And I had never seen a Cheech and Chong movie at that point. Yeah. And suddenly it's getting kind of naked. Just as my mother comes back down the stairs and goes, what is this? Why are you watching this? I'm like, I'm not watching it. He's watching it. I just was thinking about it.
True confession, my dad was total square. And, you know, we used to go to arcades and they'd get weird because they were sure he was a cop. You know, he just looked like a cop. And acted like one. And he loved Cheech and Chong movies. I'm like 10 years old at Cheech and Chong movies with my old man. He's howling. And it's just like, you know, I ended up okay, but it was just this weird connection we had where, of course, I'd go to see a Cheech and Chong movie at 10 years old, but like,
maybe
why are you doing this?
Maybe he identified with Stacy Keach's cop because he looks so much
like a cop.
Maybe
that was it. Maybe that was it.
You know?
Like Strawberry.
That must have been it.
What was his name? Sergeant Stadenko?
I have no idea, but I'd be brilliant if you knew it. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Doesn't he turn into a lizard? He turns into a lizard in one of them, right? Or something?
I'm sure he does. You know what's funny is they are... If you're not a kid, or if you're not stoned out of your brain, they're really hard to watch.
They're really hard to watch. They're awful. They're just... You know, and anytime they do a different character... you know, like a kind of a Western guy talking like this kind of thing. Like it's just,
those are just kind of funny because they're so bad.
You're so bad. It's like you're making it up. Was there a script or are you guys just making it up? We got a location, put that hat on, come over here, say something to him, we'll move on. Like,
Up in Smoke, I think, is probably the only one I really like. Because
I love how we're talking about the Star Wars Holiday Special, and we managed to get to Cheech.
Well, I know why. Why? Because
we're talking about nudity.
We got on Bruce Vilanch.
Bruce Vilanch led to Ice Pirates.
And I'm pretty sure there was a ton Iris Pirates. I was crucified on the internet for daring not to like this 80s property.
That's
P.S.
Right.
The Goonies sucks.
I love how the people, you know, why don't you guys do Ice Pirates toys? Like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll sell tens of those. They couldn't sell Big Trouble in Little China figures, which everybody loves. Like, no, it ain't going to happen. But anyway, so you got this amazing animated sequence, this short that's about, ten minutes or so.
And that's what everybody...
Everybody
who was 8 years old at the time, that was their takeaway. That was frigging amazing.
And it's the one thing that anybody who talks about Holiday Special, they'll always say, but the animated thing, you know, is it truly is like in a different, like you see it and you go, I want 2 hours of this. This could have been a 2 hour animated special,
yeah,
which probably would have done better. But somebody said, no, we got to get Harvey Korman and we got to get, you know, so-and-so. And then eventually we get back
to it also gives you hindsight as to what Lucas could have done.
Yeah.
If Lucas wanted Star Wars to remain,
yeah,
he should have gone to Nelvana and said, make a weekly TV series about Boba Fett.
Oh, yes. And all the actors have to do is show up in a studio, record some dialogue.
One episode.
That's it. And you're done. And,
yeah,
you know, do something. And then, so that's why I was always angry about, like, when they finally did an animated series and it was the, I liked those shorts. Remember the Clone Wars shorts?
Yeah,
the
Samurai, it was a Gennady.
The Samurai jacket.
Those were amazing.
So amazing and so refreshing. Like, holy shit, look what they could do if they could just, wow. And then they go, okay, we're going to do an entire series about the Clone Wars. The thing that already at that
everyone's
point.
Everyone's going to look like Davy and Goliath, though.
And also that there'd already been two movies that everybody went, ugh, God, this is so, we're not getting anywhere with these stories. They're just so bad. Yeah, let's do a full-on animated series in that world. And some, I know people have said to me, you got to try it again, like the last couple seasons, really. Well, I've tried, and it just, I don't care. I don't want something about Jedi this, Jedi that. Well, the Council and the Jedi and the politics. Plus, even though we know what's going to happen in Rebels, we know that when this is done, we're going to get into A New Hope. You have all these characters that we've never sort of had. We didn't know who they are. They're brand new, whatever. And they're having adventures. One of them uses a rifle. One of them uses a blaster. One of them uses a lightsaber. They're like a ragtag bunch of rebels, essentially. That you know, we know the outcome of... Well, Clone Wars was like, okay, I don't need to see Anakin and Palpatine on screen every week. It doesn't engage me because I go, well, he's going to go bad and he's going to, you know... You have it in the movie.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I've never seen a Hobbit film. I don't watch prequels anymore. I don't care. And
you never seen a Hobbit film, huh?
No, like I saw the Rankin Bass special as a kid, but
Did you like Rogue One?
Nope.
Oh, you didn't like Rogue One?
Oh no, no, I did not. Force Awakens, I did not hate. But that's okay, because I'm jaded. I'm so bored. I don't know what happened to me, but my Star Wars... And I drank Star Wars. I pooped Star Wars. I loved it from, like, 78 to about 83 when Jedi came out. And it felt like it was over. I felt like I was released. 97, you know, he starts bringing it back, and there's momentum, and there's, you know, we're all in our 20s, and I really enjoyed those first two, like Star Wars and Empire,
the special,
thank you, and then, you know, the action figures started coming out again, those huge Power of the Force muscular figurines, and I started buying those. And I'd say it was about 1998, and I'm sitting in my apartment, and I've got a whole wall of those dolls. And I just kind of went, it's never going to end. They're just going to keep pooping these out, and I'm going to keep buying them. And I took them all off the wall, and I sold them at a toy show. And yeah, but I think it was the only guy in the world who made his money back on those things. And then,
I hit that wall, too, because I was getting all those.
Yeah, and then I stopped, and then the Phantom Menace came out, and I looked at all the toys, and I went, well, what if I hate the movie? I went and saw the movie. It was okay. I didn't like it that much. I walked out of Attack of the Clones and went, I'm never going to another Star Wars movie again. I hated it so much.
I could see
the video game scenes in it. I could see the merchandising. I could not see the joy, the love. You know, there was nothing in it for me anymore.
I would have been able to excuse Phantom Menace more if the other two had redeemed them in some way. If the other two had done things that were like, okay, we're going to do this boring thing, we're going to set everything up, even though it's a terrible idea to have him be a kid, you should have been a teenager in the first one, lamentable. You know. We're going to do that, and you just go, okay, well, maybe, and then you know, all that, we all know the story about what happened when that got released and everything else.
Yeah.
But then it was the second one. The second one just really was like...
Oh, that was the one that just made me angry. And
the romance and the
what
just,
romance?
You know, the... Well, the dialogue, and just you're like, oh my god! And so, I got completely burned out. And then, as soon as I heard about Force Awakens and that this thing was going to happen, and Lucas was out of it, and I hate to be this guy, but when they started, the more they talked about it, the more they talked about who was getting involved, from the get go, I was in, because all it had to do now, it no longer had to live up to this beloved trilogy that is known worldwide and has been for 40 years.
Yeah, it had been tarnished a little
bit. Now, all it had to do, the high watermark were those original films. The bar had been set so low by the next three that all it had to do was capture the spirit of the original movies, and we'll be off and running. And I think that, like, this next one, everything, I'm being very careful about what I read, but I think they're very, very conscious that they're going to flip things a bit, and they're going to go places that people aren't expecting with this second one.
I hope so, because the first one, as much as I thought it was okay, I also thought, well, this is sort of just another rehash. And
I think
they nailed the characters better than they have in years, because
I love it, because, and for that very reason, because the taste in our mouth, it's kind of subversive, really. Like, everybody involved was clearly conscious of staying as far away from what went on in those prequels, or the vibe that you got in those prequels, as humanly possible. And if that meant we got a retread of the first movie, but to launch it again with, you know, the way they integrate the older characters, and I was fine with it, and it was everything that I kind of wanted it to be. And I think these next two are going to be, I think the second one especially is going to go to some very dark sort of places, though, because I think they want to do that the way Empire turned everything upside down. But the Rebels thing is close to sort of the animated thing that we might have wanted as kids. And yeah, when you see this Nelvana thing, I mean, I always said for years, like, God, do a line of action figures of just how they appear in this Nelvana thing.
Yeah,
people love it so much.
Yeah,
I would be all over that. Like, you know, I'd buy the big creature. Boba Fett's like riding a creature when he shows up with his big weapon and everything, and it's just marvelous. And then I think we go back to the planet and in the holiday special, and there's some more non-dialogue, and then eventually Han and Chewie show up. You know, Han sort of saves the day, and then we have this ceremony at the end where Carrie Fisher sings the Life Day song to the theme of Star Wars, the Star Wars theme.
Oh, yes.
And then this bizarre ceremony with all these Wookiees in robes carrying candles and, you know, doing a seance or whatever the hell they're doing in it. And then it's done. And I must have seen a commercial for it, because I was aware that it was going to be on, or I saw an ad in the paper or something. Yeah. And I was just transfixed, you know, watching it. And it's obviously it's out there. There's, you know, 8 million bootlegs of it. From, you know,
I think they're all the same bootleg, though.
Because they all have, don't they all have the Star Wars commercials within them? Because there were commercials for Star Wars toys.
Well, what I'm trying to say is them. It's like, so they, one guy taped this, and it's gone all over the world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's kind of amazing. So it's really easy to obtain. I mean, if you were smart, go, let's get an official release out there with main ofs and, you know, studio shots, you know, on the set and stuff like that. And
what a fun documentary you could get, like, the people at, like, Ballyhoo Pictures to do about the making of that. You know, while they're still living, let's get, I don't know if Pat Croft's still alive, but let's get Pat Croft and Bruce Lynch and all those folks and talk about, or Pat Proft, I'm sorry, and talk about what the hell were you thinking? And I'm guessing a lot of it is they just didn't know. There wasn't enough Star Wars to go around. It wasn't in the nomenclature like it is now. It was, you know.
Well, I have read some bits in a couple of magazines over the years, and I remember one that was fairly, not exhaustive, but it had some great information. And I remember one of the things that was being said was that it was sort of greenlit and made very quickly. Like, suddenly they said, let's do it, and they had to go, and line everything up. But I just, you know, who said, let's do an animated thing in the middle here. Let's get an animated thing. Like, whose idea? I want to know so much more about this thing that I don't think we're ever going to get. Somebody should do a documentary. It should be, you know, talk to everybody that was involved, and because it is that missing link of I think there was a big coffee table book before the first prequel came out, I think, or maybe just after the first prequel came out. And it was from Japan, and it was this huge coffee table book, like The Galaxy of Star Wars or something. And just, you know, like they did these books for, like, the Beatles anthology. They did one for called The Pythons, which is a big Monty Python book. And it's these big coffee table things. And this Star Wars one was just loads of photos and timelines. And it was, just, you know, typical Japanese book fashion, like really exhaustive. And they eventually did a U.S. release of this book. And I think in this coffee table book that's about, you know, 3 inches thick, there is one page that has photos from the holiday special. Like, they managed to get it in there in this official release. And I think it's in the U.S. edition, too. Maybe one or two pages, and that's it. You know, there could be, like, 50 pages on Star Wars and Empire. There's one page of... And that's it. That's all I think we've gotten official besides the Boba Fett figure that we got. And now this Hot Toys version,
Kenner was going to do. They had. I think it was on the cover of Tomarts magazine back in the 90s, where, like, Itchy, Lumpy, and someone had sculpted boobs on a Chewbacca figure.
That is true. Kenner. They had. Yeah. They were going to make prototypes. They made prototypes. They were going to do a set of figures. That's right. Yeah. I think I've got that Tomart thing sitting somewhere. Because they were sort of playing with
there was
that,
no Harvey Korman, and I know that fans everywhere seriously and sincerely have asked for a B. Arthur figure over the years.
Well, of course they have, of course.
Yeah. But, you know, there's always that like April Fool's special that we're going to get the Blu-ray with a B. Arthur Kenner style action figure, which I would run out and buy, and I'm sorry, I would push you down, Jason, to get one.
I would get every character. I would get, if they did a line of figures from this thing and the animated figures, I would get every single.
Oh,
I would
yes,
get every
great.
Single figure.
Yeah.
You know, in
no,
fact,
I mean,
they,
I would get Star Wars Holiday Special figures.
I don't know why I do have the affection that I do, but I think it has to do with that we know so little about it, and it is this, I mean, think about it. They had the music, they had clips in it that are cutting room floor clips. Not much, but, you know, 2 seconds here, 3 seconds there. When they go to where the cantina is, there are outtakes of people running through the streets, or like these weird
creature
legs walking past the camera. That was that was not in the film, that, you know, that were left out of the film. It's got everybody's voice. Everyone has come back for this thing. And then you've got this bit of animation in the middle of it that is beautiful. It's a cool oddity, you know. I think it gets trashed too much. I think people need to start looking at it.
I think everything becomes this sort of, everything either becomes completely overblown as great or the terribleness. And like, you're right, it is terrible. But it's also kind of a fun little relic of its time. It's weird. And I love that George Lucas hates the crap out of it. I think that's hilarious.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I do, too. I love that he hates this thing that the original performers are in and is this time capsule of what was going on in the 70s. He wants nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it, but he gave us 6 hours of... I couldn't talk long enough about those prequels and what...
How great
the time
they
was
are.
Wasted on these things. Oh my God. Just go away. Thank you very much. You know, it's my argument. It's the same argument I use for James Cameron about why this guy is considered, you know, he's skilled and he's talented. Don't get me wrong. But if you start breaking down everything he's done, you know, there's not a lot of originality in what he's done. Very, very little.
Excuse and Lucas. Unobtainium?
You know, I mean, our buddy Harlan Ellison, stole Harlan Ellison's idea for Terminator, then did it again with the sequel. Aliens is a sequel to a film and creature that already exists. Brilliant as it is, great as Terminator is, they're not, you know, entirely original ideas.
He's a very competent filmmaker. But I really, really hated Avatar. And I've never seen Titanic.
Yeah, I'm not sure I saw the whole thing either, but I know what happens at the end.
So I can't really speak to it. It just didn't look
but
like the movie.
Lucas,
like.
You go, you know, this guy was really bright, and he had this idea, and he surrounded himself with the abs. If that skill, it's the skill that he had, was to get the rights after Star Wars and say, I want to do the sequels. And they said, oh, yeah, fine, go ahead, as if that's going to happen, was genius. But also to surround himself with the geniuses that he did, I think is how we got the universe that we did. The Ralph McQuarrie's and the Joe Johnsons and the Phil Tippett's and the, you know, Ben Burtt's and all these people that brought life to it. I mean, you know, the famous story, he wanted 3PO to be like a Brooklyn used car salesman. Anthony Daniels walks in and then the whole thing changes. So when he's left to his own devices, you go, here, you do it, it's all you. We got those prequels. That's what we got. So I don't think, you know, we got to start reevaluating where the talent is and where, how these things were crafted, you know? You know what I mean?
Well, that's like anything, like you look at Jerry Anderson, he gets credited for everything. There was a team of people behind him. Derek Mannings.
Exactly. I think
Barry
Gray,
you know.
If you do it with Stan Lee and you go, well, there's a lot of, you're right, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Then you got to do it with Lucas too. You got to go, wait a second. You know, Ralph McQuarrie was the guy that said in the script, it said, you know, Vader leaves one ship and goes into another. And McQuarrie was like, oh, he's got to be wearing a helmet. I'm going to make him a helmet.
Yeah.
You know, like that. It's really, the more you break it down, the more you see just how little came directly from, you know, from, he just, you know, it was a beautiful thing, beautiful timing and everything else.
Yeah,
anyway, I think that's a great way to look at it. What you just said is that you look at the animated bit and you go, this is a snippet of what could have been in the 70s. If you wanted to keep that going.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have had to kept the main cast. It could have just been set in that universe. And I think, well, like, first of all, he did just fine. In hindsight, but
I mean, a Boba Fett thing would have been one of the bounty hunters series for the longest time. Everyone's talked about it, and that live action thing was going to be about bounty hunters and stuff that never happened. You know, a Boba Fett thing, he has more dialogue in that animated thing than he does in the films. He has more screen time in that, and everybody was so excited about this character. He's the coolest and so cool, and what is he? And, you know, so it's, I'm assuming that everybody listening to this right now has seen the Star Wars holiday special.
I would imagine.
One. So I hope that we haven't ruined it for anybody by going into great detail about it. But I think part of it is that appeal for us, that we love these things that are, you know, you're part of your love for the rack toys and everything is that they're not always on model. They're
horribly bizarre. And you
but
know,
there's something
the
really charming.
Legends of the Superheroes is the same level for me. It is live action superheroes, which you never friggin' saw. And yeah, they're you know, okay, Charlie Callis is Sinestro, and you know, they're goofy as crap. But still, my God, there's something just so sweet about it. And
that's another thing that I still need to know more about that thing. Like,
yeah.
I remember watching it as a kid, and then to this day, just going, I can't even begin to understand.
Dude,
how this,
I must have paid $100 for a copy of that when I was a teenager.
A VHS copy?
Oh, a terrible, warbly VHS copy that I'm happy to say, like, my 3-year-old son loved Legends of the Superheroes. You know, it was his level.
And again, if somebody didn't like the 70s, where you go, well, okay, superheroes were big on Saturday morning. That kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And they were kids' stuff to our parents.
And the Dean Martin roasts were a big deal when those were on.
Huge.
Those were
huge. And they weren't that great. You know?
No, they're not. They're a lot of them are just, first of all, they're completely racist and sexist in so many ways. You can't even count.
Even Ice
but yeah,
Pirates
no, they're
has
not that
racist
great,
moments now. I couldn't get over that.
Yes. Yes, it does.
You've come a long way.
But the thing is, like, I understand the roast thing. I understand the superhero thing. I don't understand how the two things came together to make to somebody saying, we got to put those two things together and we got to sell the show. We got to do this. That I will never understand, and it's I love stuff like that.
Yeah,
just weird.
Well, we also only had three channels at the time, right? So
that's right.
You made some weird stuff. I guess you took your shots, they say. But
now that you mention it, I was going to mention that Starlog, actually, there is an issue of Starlog with B. Arthur and the creatures on the cover.
I forgot about that. You're right.
From the cantina, and inside is about a 5-page article about the special with some pictures of Harvey Korman and stuff like that. And I thought I might have it put away somewhere. I don't know, but I think I might have that somewhere. But that is about the most information that ever got published at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like
the Arthur cover was an issue, I wonder what issue of Starlog. I want to say 14, but I could be wrong.
Oh my God! What
if
you were
right?
I'll,
oh God! If I'm no, I don't think I'm right.
Would you need
but,
to
because
I might have it. I'm going to check in my stuff. I might have it, and I'll text you. But it could be right. It is an early issue.
It is issue
it's definitely
19.
An early issue, but
phew, not crazy.
wow! But that was close. You're pretty close. You're not off.
Let,
by much,
you know what?
That's
let me just
sure.
let me just. Okay, I haven't looked. I'm going to say that issue 14 has a rocket ship from a George Pal movie on the cover. Let me just see if I'm crazy. Or a savant,
I'm not
going to
doubt
they
you.
Say. No, it has it's the matte painting Star Wars issue. Okay, I remember that. I had that one too.
It's a classic issue.
I don't know if I told you this. No, I didn't because I haven't seen you in a while. I was at a flea market on the weekend. Go figure. And there was a box of Starlogs, like $2-3
each.
Oh, wow. And the front, the one that was taped to the front of the long box was the beautiful issue number 2, the Space 1999 cover with Maya and Tony and, you know, the eagle exploding.
Oh.
And it was just like, I know everything in these because they've already happened. But I really want to buy this entire box and take it home and just, like, roll around in it, you know? Ugh.
Speaking of which, I think, and I could be wrong, but I thought there was a Legend of the Superheroes Starlog cover. But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
There isn't. Okay. it was on something that I used to lust after in the back of a magazine or something and go, "Ooh, I remember that show. I want to get that or something." But speaking of, I've been telling you about this new magazine.
Oh, yeah.
That is out. It's a British magazine. A British magazine called Infinity.
I swear to God,
and
it's written for us.
People that have listened to the show, people that have listened to the show know how much I love magazines, probably more than I should, because I know the print is dead.
No,
it's dying.
It's doing
but,
great.
There's something very charming about magazines, and I read them cover to cover. Now, if I pick up a magazine, if I pick up like Q and Empire and Mojo and stuff like that, if I don't pick it up every month. If I look through it or look at the cover and there's about four articles that I want to read, I will pick it up. Okay, this magazine Infinity. Okay, we're four or five issues into it. Issue one, The Making of Blade Runner. Carolyn Monroe is on the cover. Star Trek, Alien Covenant, a huge article on Flash Gordon, the movie. Plus 60s Doctor Who, Philip K. Dick, Star Crash. Okay, issue three, Space 1999. John Carpenter, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Star Trek Episode Guide, The Black Hole, Swinging Sci-Fi, tribute to Adam West. Issue four, the whole article on Alien, Moonraker, The Avengers, The Honor Blackman Years, Rise of the Super Machines, Blue Thunder, Airwolf, Street Hawk, 60s Spy-Fi, again, Quatermass and The Pit, Doctor Who, and issue five that I sent you a picture of, not Planet of the Apes, the movies, television series. Captain Scarlet at 50, Sapphire and Steel, Alan Moore, The Incredible Hulk TV series, Doctor Who in the vintage comic universe, and The Invaders, the Irwin Allen
That's
show.
That's not
the
Irwin Allen, that was Quinn Martin.
It is like someone...
Yeah,
Quinn Martin. Did Quinn Martin do Streets of San Francisco? Is that Quinn Martin?
I don't know. I'm going to...
Quinn Martin
production. Did, A Man Called Sloan...
Brilliant movie.
Oh, no, that's
their show.
Yeah.
Brilliant show.
Cannon. Wasn't Cannon a Quinn Martin production?
Do you remember the TV movie called Breaking Up Is Hard to Do with Robert Conrad and Billy Crystal and some other faces that I've forgotten? And they're all these guys that are going through separation or divorce, and they're out drinking, and they were high school buddies. And
wait a minute. Was that actually
trying
to say
Robert
Conrad?
Conrad
and Billy Crystal went to high school together?
Yeah, it was. And Billy Crystal punches Robert Conrad a couple times.
So it's
in
science
the show.
Fiction, because Robert Conrad
watching
would
as
have
a
been
kid,
his gym teacher.
I remember watching as a kid going, oh, man. Like, I felt bad that Robert Conrad got beat up because he was this tough guy, because we watched Baa Baa Black Sheep and Wild Wild West
He's
on the weekend
too.
And stuff. So I was ready for A Man Called Tom. He's oh, my God. Yeah, he talked about the Battle of the Network Stars and how Gabe Kaplan skunked him. But you look through this magazine, and it's almost like, I know this sounds egotistical, but I look through it and think, it's like someone's listening to the show and said, let's make a magazine.
Issue that I've been able to find locally, and I haven't been able to find another issue since. Yeah, it was Space 1999. I think it was the Flint movies were in there, and it was like, oh, goodness.
I mean, not just Flint, like, you know, Matt Helm is in there too in this article. It was like,
oh yeah, Matt Helm, yeah.
You know, and it's a British magazine. They love their magazines, and they really know what they're doing. But anyway, we wanted to tell you guys about it because it's very, very cool, and you know, support your local newsstand, basically, is what we're saying.
Yes, absolutely. If you can find it, buy it, and then send them to me.
Yeah, and we're trying to do a plug so that maybe they'll do an article on us or something, you know, the more we talk about them.
Yeah, that'd be great. And
so,
the more we talk about them, they might make more issues.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. There's our Star Wars holiday special.
There's the Star Wars holiday special, which we barely talked about, but that's good because it's been talked about to death. And
in a way, maybe it is. Maybe it's good that it's just the framework and we talk about all that. I mean, I really am overjoyed that we went from the holiday special to Cheech and Chong movies. That is not a jump any talk show host could make with anybody, with any guest. and we managed to do it. I think that's pretty impressive. So I'm sure there's nothing new that you guys don't know with this, with all this stuff, but you know, in honor of The Last Jedi, maybe check out Holiday Special again and give it another chance.
It might give you a really good, like, can you imagine watching, sitting through, because it is long. It's a bit of a slog.
It's 2 hours. Sitting through it's it. Almost 2 hours.
You know what's really funny is, just before we go, Rogue One came out last Christmas, and we had friends over to play cards or something, and I don't know the husband all that well, and he's a big Star Wars guy. I knew that, and I said, did you like Rogue One? And he loved it. Just absolutely adored it. And I was like, eh. I didn't really dig it all that much, and he could not fathom that I didn't like it. Like, it wasn't within his realm to understand that someone couldn't enjoy it. And I was like, it's not that I hated it. It's just it didn't connect with me emotionally. I didn't care about any of the characters. And then I started talking to him, and I said, I made a joke, like, I think I've made more of a connection with the characters in the Star Wars Holiday Special. And this guy went, "What's that?"
Oh.
Like, you're a big Star Wars fan.
How dare
you? You've surely heard of it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised that you hadn't seen it, but you're my age. You must have at least, like, heard tell of it. And he was like, "No, I never heard of it." It's like, "But you're a big Star." Like, I know he's got the figures at home, and it's like, so I put a little bit of it on, and he just looked at it like it was just, and it was the weirdest thing. It was like he had never heard of Star Wars. Like, it's one thing for just someone off the street to have not heard of it, but this guy was actually a fan. Like, he's a big fan of Star Wars.
What's funny about it?
It's hilarious.
Well, what's funny about it too now is that, I think we're living in an incredible age right now. Okay, incredible positivity and incredible ugliness as well. Because we have this device now that you and I could be talking about something, or you could tell me about a band or something, and I can literally jump online and in 2 minutes have the song that we were talking about, or find the video on the thing, or look for a clip. Everything is out there if you look for it. And I think that a lot of people don't look for stuff. They're not that curious, sort of. The thing with the Holiday Special is, if you sat that guy down and tried to show him something, I mean, it would be like watching a silent movie. It would be the weird, because there's also no context for it. Like, I can't imagine trying to show someone that, like a 23-year-old Star Wars fan or something, if you've seen the thing, no, I haven't. They would look at it like it was just this mistake, or it wasn't this official thing, or what the hell it was. It has to be put into context. Sometimes, me, it's like people that say, well, I know it's a Bond movie, but it was before I was born. Like, it's got to be a kinetic pace, or it's got to be, whatever. And you can't talk about this special without the context for it, that this was a thing that went on in the 70s. There were variety specials like this, and this was the best. We could have gotten something better, but this was kind of the best we got most of the time, with these terrible. They gave Telly Savalas a television special. Linda Carter got a television special. And, everybody got an hour to sing and dance. And
I've watched all of them, by the way, because Linda Carter... Well, actually, Linda Carter is a pretty good
singer. That's actually... She's pretty good, but the Telly one is mental. That is completely insane.
Believe it or not, I have friends who've gone to see Linda Carter sing.
Oh, I believe. I would totally see her sing. I'd love to see that. She's got some pipes. She can sing,
Oh, yeah.
But it is weird to think of just rolling that for somebody, and their mind will be blown, like, what is going on? Because it's not even good as a curiosity. You know what I mean? It's not good. It's terrible. It was, even as a kid, I just thought, okay, this is kind of cool, but I knew that I was bored.
I can't remember how I felt as a kid, but I think we were so used to seeing shows like that, like sitting through variety shows. I mean, my parents watched Sonny and Cher. They watched They watched
Captain and Tennille. The Captain and Tennille had a show.
Captain and Tennille's
show. Tony Orlando and Don had a show. Remember the Tony Orlando and Don show?
The only thing I remember about watching the remember Sonny Bono had his own show. Like he split from Cher.
No,
god awful.
That I do not. Yeah. That I do not remember. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it was good. Maybe you blocked it out.
I don't recall that at all. But it was was what they. You know, shows would go off the air, and then it was like, well, Linda Carter, she's available. The rate show gets great rate. We've got a summer slot. Let's put an original piece of program. Let's give her a special, you know? And they got pretty decent numbers during the summer reruns and stuff. And, I mean, this was obviously a holiday thing, and so they tried to time it that way. But I remember watching it as a kid and just wanting Han Solo to... I couldn't figure out why the other characters weren't in this thing. Like, I saw Han at the beginning. they're going to come back any second. And they never came back. Yeah. You know, they must have gotten them each for a day or whatever it was to do what they did. But it is a...
Yeah, it definitely was thrown together.
It is a footnote of the Star Wars universe that I don't think gets embraced enough because it's...
I honestly think if Lucas had just thrown this on VHS... in 1997 as an add-on or something, nobody'd be talking about it anymore. I think he actually did by saying, I'll smash it, I hate it. He's made it more interesting than it is.
Well, there's that, but there's also like, I love, you know, documentaries on like the Jaws documentary, and
I would love a making of.
But it also sometimes puts it into even more context for you, where you go, it's a miracle this thing even happened. Like, how did this? And then suddenly you realize that what they were going through, or the time frame that they were on, you know, whatever it was, and you go, wow, I kind of admire it a little bit more. Like, I want to know what led to this. This crazy special.
You know, the biggest tragedy of this, though, is we'll never get the full story because dear, sweet, unabashed Carrie Fisher is dead.
Yeah, and she could. She could tell it.
Yeah, she would be able to tell the funniest stories ever about this thing.
I know there was one.
You know,
Ford was on.
What's that?
I know that Ford was on. These other on Conan or somebody, and they mentioned it to him.
Yeah.
And I don't think they showed a clip, but they mentioned it, and
he claimed he had never seen it, which is believable. But I know that Fisher, in order to do some sort of DVD recording, I think it's rumored, that she demanded a copy. And, you know, you know who she was. She was very self-deprecating. She liked to take a poke at herself.
Absolutely.
I love her. You know, I loved her, but that doesn't surprise me at all if she embraced that thing.
God, can you imagine that universe that was an official release and Carrie did, like, audio commentary for that? And, you know, can you imagine her?
What might have been?
There's nothing going on for, like, an hour.
Yeah, she'd just be just talking.
You could have just had her just making shit up, and it just would have been hilarious. And,
yeah.
Yeah, very sad. Very sad. So think about that.
Might have been, eh?
Think about that, people. The next time you badmouth the holiday special, because what we could have had, you could have embraced some mediocrity.
And look at the conversation and entertainment it's brought.
Yes. I just think it's one of those things that I think as soon as somebody I see it mentioned in a magazine or somebody mentioned, they go, oh my god, that Hollywood worst thing ever made in the history of television. It's like No, it's not.
That's called Young Sheldon.
You know, no comment. But no, it's like really? Then you haven't seen much television. And by the nature of what it is and who's involved with it and how insane it is that everything else in this universe was so... It's part of that universe in the 70s that was just a little off. Empire forward. Everything is shipshape and... batten down the hatches, and this is what this guy's called, and this is what, you know, it's a through line from the rest of this weird thing in there that just, it shouldn't be there, but it is.
Case in point about style guides, Jason, at work, I won't get in deep into work, but we were selling Star Wars merchandise for a while, and I was ordering it, and one day I just like, what is this thing I bought? I looked inside, It was the same illustrations from the Presto Magic sets I had as a kid. Like, I was like, oh my god.
What?
I used these as stickers. Like, I recognize them. They're the Presto Magic's art.
Somebody grabbed those?
Somebody licensed grabbed those in the archives? And I don't want to get anyone in trouble or throw them under the bus because, you know, I have a job and stuff, but it was the same. It was a Force Awakens the item that we were selling through work, and I ordered like thousands of them and to ship out. And I'm like, "What is this thing, anyways?" And I like cracked the seal and I opened it up. There was drawings of Lando in it.
That's fantastic. That is amazing.
It just made me
love that. Do you have any of those?
Yeah.
I want one, whatever it is.
2,000 of them, yeah.
Yeah, I think I need one of those. I actually saw something today. There was a sticker book.
Yeah.
That was, you know, the Topps stickers from the original gum card set.
Yeah.
And it was a sticker book. And I started flipping through this thing, and I was like instantly 8 years old. Looking at these stickers because they were on my headboard.
Yeah, we may be talking about the same thing.
No, you said they were Presto Magic.
No, I mean like the illustrations. Maybe they were from the Topps. I can't. Like I just remembered that I had them as a kid.
Okay.
I think we might be talking the same thing.
Oh, we might be. Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's got a thing on the front that says, including The Force Awakens or Last Jedi or something. And then there's one page of images of the new cast looking like they do on the top stickers. Oh, that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the same thing. But yeah, I just kind of thought it was funny. It's style guides, they just never go away, you know?
I just love the notion of that thing getting made, and it's like, that's not made. That's made for adults.
Yeah.
That thing is made is with the coloring books, but no kid is going to know what the hell the Topps.
Yeah, well, you can do that, right? Are. Like just the same way toy companies recycle. Where, like, I have Big Jim stuff that's Matt Mason, and there's He-Man stuff that's Big Jim stuff. It's because you're getting a new audience, and you can recycle a concept, right?
Right. Yeah. I just imagine cool parents going, remember I showed you my gum card? Well, here's a book I got you.
Well, I think you know, but Battle Cat from He-Man is actually a Big Jim Tarzan that's the Panther.
Yes, and, I did know that, yes.
Like, there's Big Jim characters that are... The He-Man, they just stole the concept. Like, Many Faces is just the same face-changing kind of concept as the Big Jim Double Trouble characters. And that's well-documented. But, you know, they never thought we'd notice because they never thought... They thought we'd just throw our toys away and never think of them again, not become obsessed with them and do podcasts.
Did you see the thing that I sent you? The text I sent you with the commercial? The news... That commercial, the news piece from Christmas of 78.
I haven't watched it yet because I was at a bar with my wife there, and I like started to watch it, and it's like, oh, this is rude. So,
because they talk to a Kenner guy.
Oh, okay, I have to check that out.
And it's Christmas. I think it's a Kenner dude. And it's like Christmas of 78, and he said, I think that this could be as perennial as Disney. You know, we could be, you know, 50 years from now, we could be celebrating R2-D2 and these characters, this magical world that George Lucas.
What an idiot!
Well. We're 40 years in, 10 years to go. He's pretty...
I can't go to the friggin' grocery store.
He's on the nose there.
Yeah.
I know. I understand the burnout. But anyway, hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope you learned something, maybe.
Thank you, as always, for listening. And we'll try and squeeze one out before Christmas. We can try and do that, right?
Woo-hoo.
Great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Sure. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Okay.
That was awesome, man. You still there? Oh. Yeah.